Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about Russia's debt default and credit default swaps. So if you follow the channel, you'll be aware that Russia is technically in default on its international debt. But some of the bondholders have been very relaxed about the situation because they're holding what's known as credit default swaps. So they've basically insured their bonds so that in the event of something like this happening, they'll get a payout and so everything works out nicely. However, there's now a potential practical problem with the mechanics of those credit default swaps. So in this video, we'll go through exactly what the status is with regards to the default. We'll have a look at the credit default swaps that are out there. We'll talk about what that practical position is. And then I'll provide my summary as to what I think the implications of this are, both for the holders of those bonds and the global economy. So before we get started, as usual, if I can ask you to give me a thumbs up, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos so you can skip over stuff if you're not that interested in it. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube, Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. Russia has issued around $40 billion of international debt. And when a country issues debt, it does so in the form of bonds. So those bonds are issued by the Russian government, and the terms of those bonds are that they promise to pay interest in the form of coupons, and that their bond will be repaid at a set date in the future. And that might be 5 years or 10 years down the road. Now, as you'll know if you follow the channel, Russia has a lot of natural resources and it's got a positive balance of trade. It exports a lot of oil and natural gas and other commodities. So you may be thinking, why does Russia need to issue any debt at all because it's got all of this cash? There are multiple reasons why cash-rich countries like Russia issue bonds. Firstly, it might need a lump sum of capital. So if it wants to embark on a new project, whether it be an oil and gas facility or something of that nature, it might need $10 billion or $20 billion as a commitment to see the whole of that funding through. So rather than funding it monthly from cash flows from the government, it may go out and decide to raise a bond. It won't have any security, so the bond won't be directly linked to the particular project, but Russia may well have the intention of using it for that particular purpose. Another reason why countries such as Russia issue bonds is it can be a cheap form of finance. If the bond markets are trading at low levels and you can pick up debt for relatively low price, then it makes sense to do that. And another factor is that it's good to build up your credit rating. By having bonds in the market and continuing to pay those bonds, that means that you're seen as a good credit risk. And going forward, if you do need to raise more capital, so if things changed in Russia, then having a relationship with the bond issuing markets is a good thing because you can then go in and tap it for more money. And a final factor with regards to the issuance of bonds is that it can be a really useful way of raising foreign currency. So if you issue a bond in US dollars or euros, then you will receive a large amount of that currency. And you can use that currency if you're needing to buy things in the international markets. So there's a variety of reasons why countries like Russia issue bonds. So we've got a really unusual situation here. Russia has the cash to be able to make the payments for the coupons on its bonds. However, because of the sanctions that are in place, it can't actually move the money. So this has proved to be quite frustrating for Russia. And President Putin has come out and stated that they don't consider Russia to be in default and that they have the cash. And it's the US and the other Western nations who are forcing Russia into a default situation. So where we are right now is that Russia is technically in default. And this is like no other default that we've ever seen. Usually when a country defaults on its debt, it's the last resort. You try to avoid a default as much as possible because it kills your creditworthiness in the international markets. In the future, it's very difficult to raise more money if you're seen as being a defaulter because it puts people off. They don't want to take the risk. If something else happens in your country, they may never see their money again. So being in default has an immediate impact in terms of the bonds that are already in existence. But the longer term impact is even greater because you can no longer access the markets to pay for those big capital infrastructure programs or whatever else you might be. So it has a long term detrimental impact on your growth potential. So being in default is obviously bad news for Russia. But let's have a chat about what it means for the bondholders. Bonds are a form of debt, but they're also a form of investment. And the way that they're structured is that they have an interest coupon attaching to them. And the price that's paid relates directly to how risky the borrower is considered to be. And the way that the industry works is that we have rating agencies and they apply a rating to all bond issuers. So Russia as a country is analysed by these rating agencies. They decide how risky Russia is, what their form of income is, what the political situation is, all of the factors that could impact on the repayment of that bond. And the rating agencies then issue a formal rating, and that rating has a direct link to the price that's paid on those bonds. And of course, the people who are buying bonds are looking for places to invest capital. So these would be fund managers. So it might be pension funds, it could be government funds, it could be a variety of different funds. So we might decide to invest some of our money with PIMCO or BlackRock or somebody like that, and then they will decide where to deploy that cash. And the fund managers usually look to spread their investments around. It's what's called the portfolio effect. If you invest into 100 different things, then that spreads the risk. And then you'll get back all of the income from those 100 different investments, and that's how you make a profit and pay some profit back to your investors. So that's generally how the world of fund investing works. So when a country like Russia issues a bond, the buyers of those bonds will generally be large fund managers who are looking to invest in sovereign debt, because that's what this is. It's lending to a country rather than a company, so it's called sovereign debt rather than corporate debt. And they'll do that for a variety of different countries, and they might set up a fund that's called the International Sovereign Fund or something along those lines. Out of the $40 billion of bonds that Russia have issued, around $20 billion are held outside of Russia. So they'll be held by private fund managers, and maybe even some governments are holding some Russian debt as a way of investing and making some profit. And the benefit of holding a bond that's rated is that there will generally be a secondary market. So you can benchmark the price of that bond at any one moment in time. So if the credit risk for a company or a country improves, if it's doing better than expected, then the rating could be increased, and that would then increase the price of the bond. So you could sell the bond and make a profit at that point. And the flip side of that is that if the credit risk of that company or country is deteriorating, then that would reduce the price and you could sell the bond, but you'd make a loss in that situation. And all fund managers have to keep track of the current price and profitability of all their investments. So usually every quarter, the fund will look at the current market price of all of its bonds, and it will then do what's called a mark-to-market exercise, where it basically revalues the bond based on what it's currently worth in the international markets. One of the benefits of the secondary market is that it allows fund managers to exit from positions if they no longer like the credit risk. And the way that works is that you have a market maker, and they offer a price, and they will bring together a buyer and a seller of those bonds. And the buyers of bonds are often funds that are structured as a distressed debt fund. So they'll come in and buy bonds that are trading below par, so below the issue price, with a view to making a profit on that at some point in the future, either by expecting the price to go back up, so if they see it as a short-term movement, they may make that decision, or if they become an activist fund, they get involved and they do something that tries to force the borrower to pay them back more than they paid. So the market maker brings together the buyer and seller, they make a commission, so they'll make some profit off the trade, and the fund manager can sell out of its position. However, there is also another option for fund managers if they want to reduce their exposure. Rather than selling the bond, they can insure their position through what's known as a credit default swap. A credit default swap, or a CDS, is similar to an insurance contract and provides the buyer with protection against specific risks. Investors often buy credit default swaps as protection against the default on a specific bond they've bought. This graphic shows how a basic credit default swap works. The entity that's buying protection is the holder of the bond, and the entity that's selling protection is usually the insurance company. So in this situation, the protection buyer is the fund manager that's holding the bond. They've decided that they no longer like the credit risk. They feel that it's likely that the value of the bond is going to fall further at some point in the future. And so they want to put some form of protection in place that gives them some cash in the event of that happening. So they will buy a credit default swap and either pay an upfront lump sum premium or premiums on an ongoing basis, depending on the final terms and conditions of the CDS. The protection seller here is the insurance company, and it's selling credit protection to the bondholder. And payment only occurs from the insurance company to the bondholder if a credit event occurs, such as a default. So all of that seems very straightforward, and you would expect that now that Russia is in default, that all of the bondholders would be claiming on their credit default swaps and receiving payments from the insurance company. However, it isn't quite as simple as that, and the sanctions that are in place against Russia are causing problems with these payments. The financial sanctions prevent Russia from issuing any new bonds and also from any of the existing bonds being traded. Now, in the normal course of events, when there is a default on a bond and a bondholder claims on its credit default swap, it has to transfer the ownership of that bond to the insurer, who then takes ownership and pays out on the insurance policy, the credit default swap. The insurer will then become the owner of those bonds, and there's usually some sort of residual value. So let's talk through a quick example to give you a better understanding of that. If a fund manager buys a bond for $100 at issuance, but it's concerned that something could happen, so to cover its position, it also takes out a credit default swap on that bond, which will pay out $50 in the event of a default. Let's assume that the borrower gets into financial difficulty and does default, and that the price of the bond drops to $20 in the international markets. What will happen in that situation is the bondholder will take the bond to the insurance company, it will hand over the bond, and in exchange it will be paid the $50 that it had bought under the credit default swap. So the position for the bond investor is that they paid $100, they got back $50 under the credit default swap, and they made a $50 loss. They would have made a loss of $80 in the open market if they'd have sold the bond. So as long as they paid less than $30 for the credit default swap, it's a good deal. So if they paid $5, for example, it's a very good deal. Now, from the insurance company's perspective, the reason that they want to take control of that bond is that it's still worth $20. So they could sell that in the open market immediately and recoup $20 on the deal. So even though they've paid out $50 to the original bondholder, by selling the bond at $20, they've reduced their loss to $30. So the problem that the market has right now is that the sanctions are preventing the transfer of the bonds. So even though this is a transfer between two Western organizations, due to the fact that Russia has defaulted on the bonds, the holders of the bond want to cash in their credit default swap monies. They want to get their hands on that payment. And in order to do that, they have to transfer the bond to the insurance company. But because the sanctions are not allowing that, the transaction can't go through. Now, of course, depending on who you are in this transaction depends on what your view of the situation is. The bondholders will be claiming that this is just a technicality and that they still want to receive their payment. However, if you're the insurance company, this is a great way of not having to pay out on any of your credit default swaps, because you can say that technically you haven't met the terms and conditions of the contract. If you can't give us full ownership of that bond, we can't pay you out. So this is a really frustrating situation for the bondholders, because Russia is in default. There's a lot of credit default swaps that have been written that are there to cover this exact situation. But because of the sanctions, it means that nobody can cash them in. Now, one of the parties with the largest exposure to CDS in this situation is PIMCO, which had sell protection notional exposure to Russian CDS of around $1 billion at the end of March, meaning that it could have to pay up to that amount in the case of a credit event. As well as its CDS exposure, it's also been reported that PIMCO had over $1.5 billion of Russian government bonds at the end of March, although the value of those bonds has now dropped to around $180 million. So although PIMCO is benefiting from not paying out on the CDS side of things, it's taken a massive hit on its direct exposure to the Russian bond market. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to make this video because I think it's really interesting to see the ripple effect of the sanctions. So the sanctions are designed to stop Russia from being able to do business, to prevent them from getting more revenue. But the detail and the technicality of the way these sanctions have been structured are having a big impact on a lot of different companies. And the credit default swap market is something that nobody really thought through. The sanctions against Russian bonds have really been introduced to prevent Russia from raising any more money in the international markets, and also from people being able to trade those bonds at a profit. They weren't designed to stop payouts being made under credit default swaps, but unfortunately, the way everything's been structured, that's what's happened in reality. So the bottom line for all fund managers is now worse than expected. When you're mark-to-marking all of your investments, you will include the credit default swap. So if a bond price goes down below the level of the credit default swap, then you're likely to be able to use that coverage and say, well, actually, in the event of it hitting default, I will be able to claim under my credit default swap, I'll get that extra cash. So you could include that in your valuations. What we've got right now is that the credit default swaps have become worthless because you can't exercise the terms to be able to get the cash. So where you thought you had insurance protection, you actually haven't. It's been removed as a direct result of the sanctions. Now, as I mentioned at the start of the video, the only holders of Russian sovereign debt are fund managers and maybe some governments around the world. So it's not going to impact on individuals directly, you would think. However, those fund managers are managing your funds. That's where they get the money from, whether it be from your pension fund or your personal investments or some other related activity. So ultimately, there is a big funnel. All of the money comes from all of the consumers. It works its way through the system. And at some point, it lands in the hands of these fund managers. So even though you would think that you've got no exposure to all of this, you may well have. It might only be a very small percentage of your pension or your personal investments. But there is a chance that some of your money is sitting in these funds that have been invested into Russian bonds that had a credit default swap that no longer can claim on that insurance. But the overall summary here is that Russian creditworthiness has fallen. They're in default. That means that the price of their bonds has fallen significantly. It's unlikely that payout will be made on those bonds. So somebody's going to lose money. It starts off with a fund manager, but ultimately it might be your returns that are affected. So hopefully you found this interesting, informative and educational. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.